Port Game Day Podcast is a weekly preview of Port Adelaide's AFL action. Make us part of your game day routine and tune in as you get ready to cheer on the power. Welcome back to the Port Game Day Podcast, coming to you on the Port Fan Radio Network. I'm your host, John, and I'm stuck on 47 games in the Div 6 Reserves. Joining us as usual, Mum wants me to come up with a better intro for him. It's Friendly Andrew.
Good evening. Thanks, Mum, for continuing your campaign of better nicknames.
Absolutely. And also with us is a shadowy figure from the Adelaide hip-hop scene and former winner of KFC's King Chicken.
G'day, Jimmy. G'day, Walker. AT, how are we tonight?
Do people still remember what KFC Kicking for Chicken is?
Well, I think you're keeping it alive.
The flame burns bright on the Port Game Day Podcast.
That was the first. That was the first year at Adelaide Oval, wasn't it? And now we're year four. Yeah. Maybe they'll bring it back one day. I see that KFC has come out with a Tabasco marinated. Chicken dish.
Yeah, maybe next time they'll kick a flaming football. Yeah. That'd be a sight to see. Yeah. Get around
there
it.
There you go. Yes. And, well, boys, the Power takes it to Gabba this weekend for Saturday Twilight Footy against the 14th-ranked Brisbane Lions. The Lions are sitting at 1-4 under new coach Chris Fagan, but they've shown a bit more resistance this season than they did previously, certainly last year. Changes to the side see Darcy Gardner, Tom Cutler and Michael Close in for the omitted trio of Cedric Cox, Ryan Bastanac and Liam Dawson. For the Power, captain Travis Boak has succumbed to a hamstring injury from last week, and the first gamer call-up, Aidan Johnson, has been omitted, with Jack Hompsch and Hamish Hartlett returning. So I guess, firstly, guys, thoughts on those changes? Are they pretty much self-explanatory?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about the balance of this week's team. That's the only thing I look at that team on paper and think maybe, I don't know, maybe we should have brought in another midfielder to replace the Boak output, but looks like they're going to shuffle around a couple of those back flankers, maybe seeing Broadbent, Hartlett, spend a bit more time in the middle. But yeah, it's just unlucky. I mean, Johnson was fantastic in his first game and kicked a goal with his first kick, which is something he can hang his hat on when he retires and tell the grandkids about, but it's just unfortunate he was a late in, so I guess, you know, first man in, first man out when Hammer comes back straight in. But I just think we're going to have to rely on a couple of other players, spend some more time in the midfield, because Brisbane's midfield is definitely their strength, and I just would have thought this would have been a week to bring in another inside-outside type. There's been some good players in SANFL form, and Boak's a big loss. You know, he's been in good form this year, so it's a bit of a hit. But someone has to step up into that role, and hopefully this week we get some extra run and extra inside stuff.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's mostly down to bringing in two guys that have played behind the ball, players, defenders this year. Compared to two that were sort of playing ahead of it. So it does sort of change the balance. I mean, we get back a toll. So the last 2 weeks have seen us basically revert back to the structure we trained through pre-season. So the hand-wringing and teeth gnashing of the last couple of weeks can pop down for a little while. We're back to where we needed to be. But yeah, that midfield spot, it'll be interesting to see where we go, whether we pull Sam Gray up the ground, or whether Broadbent gets pushed up. I think he's the best choice. He's the one with the midfield experience to go in there and can play a similar role to Boak, in that he can go a little bit inside. He's got a big body, but also can sort of be that link man on the outside with his penetrating kick.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the bench. We've got Hartlett, Amon, Impey, and Dan Houston all on the bench. None of whom are like out and out midfielders. Really, they're all kind of flanker types. So we are not batting as deep as we have been so far this season. We've definitely got yeah, we're probably a man down or two. Sam Powell-Pepper's been named on the ball as the rover. So, yeah, I mean, probably maybe a bit more midfield time for those kind of part-timers this week in your Gray, Young, again, probably a Wingard.
Yeah, I was going to say Chad Wingard, definitely. He's spent a bit of time against Carlton in there and racked up 25 and kept a couple. So he's probably another one we're expecting to play a bit more this week.
And Powell-Pepper can probably have a few more midfield minutes as well. I mean, he's only going in about 60% time on ground at the moment, so you might be able to squeeze an extra 5 to 10% out of him just for this week.
So your dream scenario of Sam Powell-Pepper to centre half forward will probably have to wait another week, Andrew, as we probably don't have the rotations to do it this week. Another player who we welcome back, and it's probably worth talking about, is Jack Hompsch. And it seems we've played a fair bit of football without him over the last, 25 games of AFL footy. So it's good to have him back in the team. And we now have the three recognised tall defenders. So good to have him back. And as you said earlier, I think it was Andrew, that we've almost got our full complement of players other than Travis Boak in the side. And as a result, we're probably playing to pretty much the structure that I would imagine was our plan A coming into the season.
Yeah, I think Hompsch coming in is going to really improve our defence, and he adds so much to that back line. And I think one man in particular, Tom Cleary, is going to be licking his lips with Homer back there now. He's just so important, being that third man up and running off the half-back line. He creates so much drive off that half-back line, which we obviously rely on. But yeah, I mean, him back in means Trengrove can play forward, which I think he'd done a pretty good job against Carlton, and it helps Dixon out a bit, taking another defender away. So that balance with Homer back in, the back line will definitely be, hopefully, much improved. But I just think if we win the midfield, I think we're pretty sweet in regards to around the ground. It's just a matter of beating their midfield and scoring goals. So the back line looks good, and it's just a shame. I think if Hompsch was playing against the Crows and GWS, we might have been a sneaky chance to win those games.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, the team's kind of coming together now, and that balance in the back line is looking pretty good. Probably, you know, this week we just need to find a few more, I guess, possessions from those part-time midfielders. So, I mean, speaking of Brisbane, I mean, they're a team that definitely floats below the radar a bit at the moment. They haven't really done much in terms of finals contention over the last few years. Mentioned at the top of the program that they have got a new coach in, and Chris Fagan came over. I think he was the football manager or something along those lines at Hawthorn. Have we seen much out of Brisbane this year? And if so, what are you seeing from the Lions coming into this one?
Well, they've been a bit more. They've certainly been more competitive, I think, than most people expected. They've been certainly on recent form. I think I watched the second quarter of their game last week against the Western Bulldogs, which was probably the worst quarter to watch in preparing for this, because they absolutely blitzed the Bulldogs and looked like one of the best teams going around, and then collapsed once I'd switched over and went down by five or six goals in the end. So they're certainly more competitive, a bit more organised, and sounds like a bit more of an even performance. So, yeah, certainly I think it's going to be a more competitive game than last week, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely a danger game for us. Their midfield, I saw them play against Essendon, and they were competitive for three and a bit quarters. They just, obviously being a young team, weren't able to put four quarters together. And I was listening to Hipwood during the week, and, you know, they're just aiming to do four quarters of footy, and that's their goal. If they put that together, they're a sneaky chance to beat us. But obviously their midfield is what impresses most people, and, you know, the likes of Beams, he's a gun, you know, Zorko and you know, old mate Rockcliffe, they're a combination that could do damage, and they're Ruckman Martin as well. So get those if they're all firing on their day, we're going to have a handful, and we've got a lot to worry about. So if we can contain them and win our own ball, I think we'll go a long way to winning it.
Yeah, I mean, that midfield you spoke of, they were much vaunted coming into last season, and a lot of them kind of fell over with injury, but they've finally got that kind of that top line midfield back on the park. And you've got kind of got the new captain, Dane Beams, and the ex-captain, Tom Rockliffe, who are both averaging over 30 touches, and Dane Zorko, as you mentioned, is always dangerous. I mean, I've seen bits and pieces from them this season, bits of that Western Bulldogs game. When I saw the scoreline, I just kind of, I think I flicked over to it because I thought, what's going on here? They got out to like a 5-goal lead against the reigning premiers, and they just ran over the top of them. So you both spoke to it as far as their inability to put together four quarters. And I think what they've shown under Fagan, and they showed it throughout the preseason as well, that they're moving the ball a lot cleaner, with a bit more system. They just are really inconsistent, and maybe that comes down to their pretty raw, young key position players. So we'll get to those guys a bit later. So we've talked about a few guys from either side of the midfield battle. How do we view the rucks situation this week? Last year, just trying to remember, we had some pretty big wins over the Lions, and the second game, I think, of, or was it the first time we played them, where Tringove kind of busted out, it must have been the first one, Tringove kind of busted out in the ruck, and I think Stephen Martin dominated the hit-out count, but Tringove had something like just a stack of clearances and kind of dominated the game. Martin's been, like, he almost acts as an extra midfielder. I mean, he's averaging 20 touches a game in addition to his 44 hit-outs. He's pretty, he's a bit of a darling of the fantasy community. I don't know how much impact, like, he's not a dominant ruckman by any stretch, but he's certainly prolific. How do we see that battle this week? Is that a danger?
Yeah, I mean, I heard Paddy Ryder on the radio. He rates, obviously, him pretty highly. He knows that his stuff around the grounds where, obviously, he accumulates a lot of it. And you mentioned the fantasy stuff. He actually ranks 16th in the AFL for fantasy points. And funny enough, Zorko and Rockcliffe are equal top on 127.4 average. So they've got four players in the top 21, if you include Beams as well. So he gets a lot of it around the ground. So Paddy's going to have a day. You know, he's going to have to be on his game on the day. And He's been all right around the ground too. His aerobic capacity is pretty good after having a year off, and he usually he was talking about having to combat, you know, bigger bodies. But as far as the art of rucking goes, I mean, I'd like to think Ryder has the edge on Martin. It's just a matter of if he can run him around the ground, tire him out, which obviously might affect his ruck work. So he'll have to follow him around and be on his game in, around the ground, but in the air and at stoppage, I'd like to think Paddy has the advantage.
Yes, I think it was that round 7 game last year where we spanked him, and it was 51 hitouts to 14. Although interestingly, Tringove had 13 clearances off 14 hitouts, so he did damage around the ball. But I second exactly what James said. I think Ryder's capability in the ruck is far superior to Trengove's, particularly that game when Trengove was basically one of his first games in the ruck full time. So I think Ryder can handle him, and I think he's got some things that'll trouble Martin with around the ground in the air. I think he's got a bit more of a leap to him. Martin's a bit of a sort of a ground and pound type, keeps pretty close to the ground, but and moves around quite nicely. So yeah, I think we can use that to our advantage.
Definitely the combination of having Ryder and Tringo is really handy, because we've got Paddy, who's like the leaping tap ruckman, and Jackson Tringove, who can go in there and do a lot, like when the ball hits the ground, if he can repeat his effort against the Lions from last year. We've kind of got two approaches in the ruck, and I'm just bringing up the hit out statistics for Brisbane Lions, because I was just kind of racking my brains as far as who does, like, is their second ruckman, and it doesn't really look like they have one. I mean, Michael Close and Josh Shackey both average one hit out a game to come in equal second, basically. So Martin's obviously been doing a fair bit of the work, and who definitely have his work cut out for him this week against two ruckmen who will be, you know, be able to tag team him. So, you know, hopefully we can get the edge there.
Yeah, there was an interesting article on the ARC website this week, which is a, if you haven't been on it, it's a,
no, I haven't.
It's a sort of an advanced stats website for AFL. He does some posts on ESPN as well. Seriously good. And he had a really good article this week about the death or sort of investigating ruck work, and particularly the death of the second ruckman. Mm. That's basic. That's gone the way of the dinosaur, and that you really only have, like you said, the guys from Brisbane and the Trengoves that chop out here and there and may only get a small number of hit outs every game. So I think Martin does the lion's share of it.
Speaking of rucking and the rule change that we've had this year, I've noticed a lot of ruckmen actually like the rule change, but it's a lot of the media and, you know, coaches, there's a few different people that don't like it. But I find it funny that ruckmen actually like it, because they're the ones copping the hits on the side. They're the ones that are taking that body blow when there's a third man coming in. But, you know, coaches like to point out that, well, if we're sending the third man up, that's one less player on the ground. But it's an interesting one, and the debate that will continue on for the rest of the year.
I think, I like the rule. Like, it's consistent. It makes it easier. And, like, there's just been a bit of teeth gnashing over, like, the fact that the players have to nominate, as if that's, like, something that actually matters. Like, people are offended by the fact they have to put their hand up or something. Like, you know, this is where your ex-footy player Robbie Walls and, like, your Graham Corns, like, spew over something that's just pretty irrelevant and doesn't really matter. So, yeah, I mean, I kind of like the rule so far. It does take out the kind of, like, one element of the game, but... I'm sure, as you're saying, Jimmy, the ruckmen probably appreciate not being used as stepladders half the time. And we were the worst exponent of third man up kind of in the history of the game. So
yeah, well, it's one of my favourite. Well, it's one of my favourite parts of the game, and I like to see the art of rucking. And obviously, two blokes going at it is better than having some bloke crash in and you know, spoil that spectacle. And yeah, I mean, for me, I just let two blokes go at it, no nominations, one from each team. If there's a third man up, it's a free kick. They sort it out, two people go for it. Stuffing around with nominations, it might just put a bad taste in some people's mouth, but I don't know, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I think there was, after that really bad one, it was Etihad, I think, Western Bulldogs versus Sydney, I think it was. I can't remember. It might have been that one. They were talking about it on 360, and the point was made that they're going to have to maintain the nomination system because of the rules of surrounding blocking a ruckman. You can't just penalise the third man up, because if you block someone off the ball and he says, I was going up for the ruck, I was the ruckman, I should get a free kick, it lands all that. I think the tweak that they've done, which is right, is that the umpires are much quicker now on going, who's the ruckman? You, and let's go, as opposed to sort of waiting around for someone to put their hand up. They're just a little bit sharper on that. So, I don't have a huge problem with it. It's just a news cycle thing. They've got to have something to talk about off a week.
Yeah, you get one every couple of weeks, that's a doozy, and they want to talk about it all week. But generally, I think it's been good.
And they've done a thing because we've just spent 3 minutes talking about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're playing Brisbane this week, so what else are we going to talk about? As far as the goal-kicking aspect of the game, taking a look at Brisbane's forward line, they've got some interesting players up there. You spoke about how you heard from Eric Hipwood during the week, Jimmy, and he's definitely kind of come on the scene a bit this year. He played a few games last year and has impressed. He's an interesting character. He's all arms and legs, and he's got a very deliberate approach. I think he's kicked 9 goals through the 5 games so far. Josh Shackey, still finding his feet at this level. He's obviously can play, but surprisingly, he kind of found himself, I think he's only played 2 or 3 games this year. He found himself out of the mix to begin with. So they've got those young key position players, and like, otherwise they seem to rely on goals from their midfield. Do either of those players present any issues for our defenders this week?
Well, Hipwood's 6'7". He's a string bean. He still obviously has to fill out, but he's very athletic. Athletic player, likes to fly at the ball, and yeah, he was the one that stood out against Essendon. I remember in the third quarter, he got off the leash and started getting some momentum. So he's one we definitely got to worry about, because if he starts getting a couple of goals, he will lift the team. And yeah, like you said, they rely on a lot of those younger players, but the midfield types to kick goals. But he's definitely a player to watch for the future. I think he could be anything. You know, he looks like a real true centre forward. So 6'7". Who would be the likely one to take him? I mean, in the past, it'd be Jackson Trengo, but I think our tallest defender is 6'4", so we're going to have to rely on team defence as per usual.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to matter whether it's Cleary or Jonas or...
I think Holt should probably be the guy to get the first gig for me.
I almost prefer Homsch to not playing him, particularly if it's just Hipwood and Shacky and Close doesn't go forward. Close is coming to the team, which is interesting, because they could potentially go Hipwood, Shacky and Close in the forward lines at 202, 199 and 197. That would make them pretty tall and vulnerable to us running off them, but could present us some issues if they get some clean movement in there. But I quite like the idea of, because they're sort of still relatively young, skinny, tall forwards, is putting Cleary and Jonas, the bigger bodies on them, to sort of body them in the marking contest, and then have Homsch come across as a third man up, get into contest. That's how I'd like to see it play.
Yeah, so Shucky's 19, Hipwood's 19. They got McCluggage, he's 19. So they're pretty young. I mean, their oldest players, named Taylor, 22. So, I mean, they're very inexperienced, very green. So, with our experience, I think, like, if we get some body on them, try and rough them up, try and really get into them, we could probably get that team defence with Homer back, you know, cutting off that forward entry to stop their influence and hopefully not get those contested marks inside 50.
I mean, it's pretty good signs for the Lions, to be honest, like, with these young Keys they've brought into the team, no pun intended there. I mean, you reeled off those guys, and then you've got Harris Andrews and Daniel McStay down back. They've kind of loaded up through their academy, and fair enough. They bring in some Queensland players into their side, and Josh Shacky has a high draft pick. So if they can hold on to
Josh Shacky's put off contract talks, though. So,
has he?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And he's got a close connection with the club, because his old man played for them as well. So it would be a blow for them if he did something like walking out.
Which clubs he got a contact with? Brisbane.
He's got close contact with Brisbane, yeah. Lawrence, who I think he may have passed away, but he was...
So Shucky's come from the Bush Rangers. What AFL club likes to poach Bush Rangers, I guess? I don't know.
Well, there's been some talk as always happens, like, the big four clubs have been put up there.
Collingwood.
Yeah.
The saviour. No. Yeah. Anyway. No, Brisbane deserve to keep some players. I mean, if they keep losing players at the rate they've lost them over the last 5-10 years, I guess, they're going to crumble, but... Yeah, we've picked up a good little gun in Jared Polak from Brisbane, so we're not complaining.
Yeah, I guess if their coach, you know, and if they is like putting in a system that the players believe in, that's probably, and they can see a bit of a pathway, a bit of a future. That's probably when they re-sign and all that kind of stuff, as we've found. What about up forward for us? I mean, I mentioned those guys before: Harris Andrews, Daniel McStay, etc. Can they, like, who do they send to Charlie Dixon? Is that a gig for Harris Andrews, who stands 202 centimetres?
I think Harris Andrews is the right one. Will be the one that goes to Dixon. He's got the height. I think he's their number one key defender. McStay's only sort of just moved down there this year from memory, so he's more likely to take Trengove. They've also brought in this week Darcy Gardner and Tom Cutler, who are good sizes themselves. They'd almost be key defenders in Port Adelaide world with at 192 and 191 centimetres. So they've got a relatively tall back line, and having brought a couple of those guys in, I wonder whether it's a reaction to something they've seen about the way that we're playing this year.
Hmm. And I mean, I think I mentioned it last week, but similarly to Carlton, they don't really seem to have that lockdown kind of small defender. So I'd hope again this week that our small and medium forwards can do some damage on the scoreboard. I mean, obviously Robbie Gray had a bit of a day out, but it would be good to see like a Chad Wingard or Aaron Young kick a bag. I mean, Robbie Gray's been named as Ruck Rover, so
what did you think of Youngie's game against Carlton?
I can't really remember. He didn't seem to do much off the top of my head.
He kicked a couple of goals.
It was just okay, I think.
Yeah, and Dixon's game? I know he's been criticised for not getting a touch in the second half, but I thought he was involved in a couple of, you know, contests which resulted in goals without getting a touch. But with Trengove coming in, he was able to get off the leash with, obviously, Dixon taking a defender as well.
I reckon they... I think I said to you, John, at the game, I reckon they took Dixon off early in the last quarter and really sort of trimmed his game time up and freshened him up. He had to do a pretty manful job of being our only target for a couple of weeks. So I imagine they just wanted to freshen things up, get Trengove a look in the forward lines. We didn't really need to spend Charlie's petrol tickets in that last quarter. So I haven't looked at the stats, but I imagine his time on ground was down. I think he's actually playing quite well. I think just in the last couple of weeks, our inside 50s have gone a little bit, reverted back to 2016 just a little bit. We're kicking it a little bit too high. One of the really noticeable things, particularly against Sydney, was how low we kicked the ball inside 50, even in those sort of pressured entries inside 50, we were still kicking it quite low and actually putting it out in front of Dixon, and we've reverted back to kicking it on top of him. And a little bit of that is getting him on the move, but I think there's a fair bit of responsibility on the kicker of actually putting it into a position where Dixon has to move into the ball. And I think that's where he gets his free kicks, because when you're standing and wrestling, you might get one. When you start moving, the umpires see the jumper move or the arm go back. And I think they're more likely to pay him. So I think that's one thing that we should be focusing on for this week.
Yeah, definitely. Like I mean, Dixon had 5 touches last week, and ideally, you know, in an absolute rout against Carlton, you think he probably should have got his hands on the footy a bit more. But I mean, the first half, I don't think the service was actually that good, as you said, Andrew. I mean, we've got Polek and Carl Amon's shown a bit just as far as bringing those kicks inside 50 to a lead, but on the whole, and not really naming any names, like pretty much every other midfielder and a few notables just kind of bomb it and don't really give him the best of opportunities. So, it was a difficult game to judge go on.
One note with Charlie is like he definitely gets a lot of confidence from getting his hands on the ball early, and if he can kick a couple of goals and really come into the game early, it will really help us get a good start, and I know that lifts the team as well when he's getting involved and getting a few early ones. It really helps the team for the rest of the game, and I think it's real important he gets a good start each week, and that really helps us win games, and I noticed the team really lift around him.
Absolutely, he's the best celebrator and the best getting around of the boys type we've had at the club in quite a while. It's good to see. I don't know what it is about us. We haven't really been the one to kind of like really celebrate goals, and you can actually use that to build momentum because the opposition see that and, you know, the cheer goes up and that kind of stuff. We've normally been a bit dour and kind of like, you know, like treaders, like just kind of strolling back to position rather than getting fired up.
Yeah, I know. That's a bit Robbie Gray-ish. I mean, Westhoff's a bit lethargic. Trengove obviously gives it a bit of a pump up, and Wingard does what he does. But I mean, yeah, those type of guys we really need, like playing well, and it's so important having a good start with them, lifting the team with their actions.
All right, guys. Well, we might get to the final segment here, and this is our six-pointers. This is our usual segment where our panelists will make some predictions about the game that you can keep an eye on as it unfolds. So, Andrew, I'll let you kick this one off. Give us your best on ground by Supercoach points.
I'm going to go for the acting captain, Oliver Wines.
Nice pick. Yeah, I thought he was fantastic against Carlton. He's just set up a lot of goals and was just in and under all days. Big game for him this week, being a captain for the first time, our youngest ever, I heard today, representing Port Adelaide. So that's an interesting little tidbit. I think he's going to be captain in 2 years' time, maybe next year. I'll see how we go. But yeah, good pick. I'll take Robbie Gray this week. He obviously is racking it up and starting to get a bit of recognition from the rest of the competition. So look for him to have a big game this week.
Yeah, two guys in some fine form. So our leading goal kicker, Jimmy, who is going to slot the most goals on the weekend?
Yeah, I just think this is a week. Robbie Gray kicks another five, so I'll take him again.
Andrew?
I'm going to go Charlie Dixon.
Fair enough. Okay, our next category is the Scott Harding teal and maroon jacket, which you are playing off for, and it is a group of three players, Jonas, Hompsch and Cleary, our three key defenders. Who will achieve the most pressure acts out of those three players for the Scott Harding teal and maroon jacket? Andrew?
I'm going to go with Jack Hompsch.
I'll take number 42, TJ Tommy Jonas.
Hashtag best defender. Okay, now, Brisbane, the Gabba, what is its capacity? Who even knows? What will be the crowd figure, Jimmy?
Oh, mate, why do you give it to me first? No idea. I'll take 18,000.
Andrew?
I'm going to go 21,000.
Hmm. God, who even knows what they get to games these days? I'm going to bring up last year's total here just quickly, see what I can find. Here we go. 13,000. Sorry, you don't get to change your. Of course, that was late in the season when things were diabolical for Brisbane, but probably not drawing the most crowds at this time of where they sit in the competition. Anyway, finally, give us your margin and tip, Andrew.
It's not without hesitation that I go Port Adelaide by 28 points.
No, I was going to take Port Adelaide by 21.
Fair enough. And we'll make it a trifecta. I'm going to take Port Adelaide by 32 points. I think we do have some vulnerability through the midfield, but around the ground, we really should have them for class. So I would hope and imagine that we can do the job and continue on. I think we're solidifying ourselves like in the top six at the moment. So an important game for us. And if Brisbane can get a jump on us, that can be dangerous because...
Well, they did in 2015. They, beat us by nearly 10 goals, didn't they, in that infamous game?
Yeah, so another revenge game, really. I mean, we kind of blew them off the park a couple of times last year, but the guy should still be, fuming about that one in 2015 and take it out on them this week. Alrighty, guys. Well, that's it. Quick turnaround. We'll take in the game on Saturday afternoon. Hopefully, it's a good one. Hopefully, we can get the W. And as I said, keep our finals contention alive, and maybe even a top four kind of look in. So I guess that's it for this evening, guys. Thanks for chipping in.
Fingers crossed for the Utah Jazz Port Adelaide double on a Saturday will be a fantastic weekend.
Okay. Absolutely. The traditional.
Just remember to power up on sports bet if you're going to do a multi in that. Just
with
really increase your odds.
With Crows to lose.
Oh, goodness gracious. Yep. gamble responsibly and, you know, or, you know, just put that money towards a nice lunch. Yeah. Anyway, stay tuned for all the shows. There's podcasts just coming through all the time on Port Fan Radio. And give us a review on iTunes. It helps us pump up the Port Fan Radio network. So, all right, folks, that's it from us. Enjoy the game and go the Power.
Go the Power. Go the Jazz. Go the Jazz.
Go the Jazz.
Jingles. Jingles.
I saw Joe.
Hey, God.
Brown Netto.
Rudy.
Come on, Andrew.
Greg Oster tag.
The mailman.